On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki. Hey.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. It is the ultimate rap here on 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, where we'll have a look at everything that's happened in the world of sport in the last 24 hours or so, and even longer. And there's so much to talk about, and I'll do it today with my old mate who's sitting across from me. He's had a couple of weeks up north, sunning it up in Noosa. George Denikin, good morning.
Good morning. And listen, if you're in Melbourne today and you're thinking about getting out of bed, don't. But if you do get out,
stay under the doona.
Here's the plus. It's super still and it's super sunny.
Yeah, it is.
Which means it's nigh on a beautiful, brisk winter's morning.
Yes.
It can't get any better. So, well done. And don't look at the temperature gauge. Then you won't know how bloody cold it is.
No, very true. Don't listen to me. It's not 3 degrees.
And g'day, mate. And while I was away, many happy returns for your 21st birthday.
Thank you very much.
Beautiful.
Plus an extra 29 on top of that. We've got lots to talk about this morning, mate. We've got the AFL. Some great games so far over the weekend, especially last night.
You are still levitating over the fact that your boys, the mighty Richmond, yeah?
Yeah.
Won the arm wrestle at the Adelaide Oval.
And it was an arm wrestle too. We'll talk to Brett Anderson about that.
You wouldn't have been able to do that a year or so ago.
No,
you're
very true. Very true. Brett Phillips will talk about Wimbledon coming up over the next couple of weeks.
BA's coming, is he? Is he going to join us?
Yes, he is. Brett Phillips also talking
tennis. He gets a bit gun-shy Sunday mornings.
You reckon?
Yeah. Can't get a word out of him.
Cricket. How interesting is that?
Oh, listen. They can't get a word out of anybody with cricket. We're going to go back to the days when Sir Donald Bradman ran the game and the players, you know, divvied up a few bucks here and there, and they used to have sporting dinners and luncheons just to make the numbers up.
George Sinekian could be opening for Australia at the Boxing Day.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. I would have, in my fantasies.
And Peter Maniatis also, because we've got a big boxing
Peter
match.
Peter knows his way around.
He does too. Yeah, but let's kick it off talking footy.
Why don't you do that? Have you got BA there?
Yeah, he's right on the line.
BA.
Brent Anderson, good morning.
Hey, boys. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, Shebester. I know you like your New York Mets, but it's a big day for Bobby Bonilla. $1.2 million he gets paid today, and for the next 30-odd years, it's amazing.
And there'll be bobbleheads handed out, I reckon, outside City Field today.
If anyone doesn't know the deal,
it's the back-ended, the ultimate back-ended job.
Absolutely. Bobby Bonilla was owed, I think, $5 million by the New York Mets, and they decided to defer that payment over the next 30-odd years. So today, and he hasn't played for the Mets since 2000, today he gets another $1.2 million in the skyrocket. So a great deal that was.
I want to know where his agent is because I need him.
he needs a statue, that bloke.
Just before we go into footy, and you're talking about money deals over in the States, have you seen some of the money that's been offered for some of our Aussie basketballers? Steph Curry,
mate.
$110 million over 5 years, or $120 million over 5 years. But let's talk about Joe Ingles looking at an $80 million contract over the next four years. Patty Mills, I think, just signed a $67 million contract for the next 4 years. This is great stuff
you know
for
what
Australian
it does?
Basketball.
It gives Australian basketball, and for all the kids who are growing up, a fantastic pathway.
Yeah.
And if they want a dream, like you and I once did, and well, you still do, but I basically have given it away. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, it certainly is. Some big money there, mate. Some big money.
Hey, Brett, that's you want to go and play basketball?
I'll play anything when I can get $1.2 million a year for doing nothing for the next 30 years.
I tell you what, mate, there's some blokes earning their dollars out on the footy field over the weekend and some great matches. Let's talk about the two last night because I think there's been no better in this round so far. Richmond were fantastic against Port Adelaide, but GWS and Geelong, let's kick off with them first up. What a great tussle that was.
An amazing effort from the Cats, really, wasn't it, guys? When you consider the outs that they had, Joel Selwood, a late out with that concussion on top of the injuries and the change that they had midweek. And then Daniel Menzel, the latest of late outs before the game. So they had a couple of debutants come in. Young Scott Simpson came in and played his first game. And then you also had Wiley Buzzer coming in as well. So they had a very young team last night, Geelong. I think that when you look at it on the surface, I know that GWS are young as well with the list that they've got, but it's an ultra-talented list. But that was just an amazing effort from the Cats last night and led by Paddy Dangerfield. He didn't have his trusty sidekick alongside him, Joel Selwood, but 40-odd possessions. He was amazing, and he was the one who really drove the Cats early on. I think he had one kick and 14 handballs in the first quarter.
But, BA, you don't pay players big money unless they're going to do that. And Dangerfield came not only with a huge reputation, but a big contract, and he's delivering, isn't he?
He is. yeah, absolutely. It probably got unders compared to what he could have done in other clubs in terms of wanting to go to Geelong and wanting to play at home. He would have probably made a lot more if he had decided to just be open to any other club. But
yeah, he should have gone to the Mets.
What? Yeah, absolutely. He could have deferred a payment. But what he did last night was outstanding. And look, they were probably dead and buried at times, I thought, GWS last night. Geelong had all the running, and then they just started to get the game back. And it was on the back of Johnny Patton, who ended up with four goals, who was the main one up forward, who really looked like taking the game away from the Cats at times. And in the end, they couldn't get him back on the ground at a key time. He sat off the ground for, I think it was 6 or 7 minutes in the last quarter when they really needed him down there, when they were peppering the inside 50s up forward. And they just didn't have Patton there to take the mark and potentially kick a game-winning goal. But in the end, it was Tommy Hawkins with the shot after the siren. And unfortunately for Tom, there was a whistle round about the time he was kicking it, which I don't know whether it put him off or it didn't put him off, but he missed the shot, and it's a draw, first one of the year.
Did you actually feel at any point that he was going to kick the goal? My thoughts, as soon as he took the grab, was that this is going to be a point for sure. Anything different.
He'd been kicking the ball quite well. I actually thought that it was set up for him to kick it based on a bit of a fairy tale for the Cats with their young team in and all the injuries and just one of those season-defining wins. But even then, you miss and you get the draw. If you had a set time at the start of the day with the injuries that they had and the players out and the team that they were playing against, if you had said that we'll give you 2 points, I reckon they would have taken it.
Because he's done it before. I remember being at the London Olympics a few years ago with Andrew Gaze, who was a Hawthorn supporter, listening to SEN's call of the game between Geelong and Hawthorn, and Tommy Hawkins kicking that goal after the siren.
Yeah, you'd probably prefer him from that distance, that 50 metres out where he was against the Hawks that night. But it was just a fantastic performance from Geelong. And I think supporters at Go Away being absolutely thrilled with what they saw from players who really stepped up last night, and then knowing what they've got to come back in. For GWS, though, it's a minor concern, I would have thought, last night. Yeah, they've got their own injuries as well, and they lost Jeremy Finlayson during the game, unfortunately, on debut with a knee injury. So that's a terrible way for his AFL career to start. But, it's just one of those ones with GWS at times. You think that you know that you've got them sorted out and that they're clear premiership favourites. And then there's little things like last night that you just sit there and they raise some doubts in your mind again as to whether they're just ready.
Well, it's a classic case of no one really putting their hand up to want to win the premiership this year. Everyone who seems to be in that favourites position does something to make you think, oh, gee whiz, I just don't know, which means that as we talk about the next game, Richmond and Port Adelaide, Richmond, and people will say, oh, you're a Richmond supporter, you're saying this because of that. Seriously, though, Richmond are as good a chance as anyone at the moment to win the premiership because no one's saying they want to do it. And the Tigers are looking as good as anyone.
Absolutely. When other supporters sit there and say, oh, you're only saying that because you're a Richmond supporter, well, they should know better than most that if you're a Richmond supporter or a Melbourne supporter, generally we're negative about our team and we're afraid of actually saying that stuff. So the fact that we are saying that about our own teams suggests there has to be something behind it, and it shows how even that it is, because generally we'd be petrified of saying anything or even thinking it. But the Tigers are certainly in the mix, and they're doing it because they're super resilient from defence to attack. Like the back half can get bombarded, but on top of Alex Rance, who's having obviously an outstanding season, first half last night he was well beaten, but then he bounced back. But you've got Dylan Grimes and you've got David Asprey, who are playing their roles fantastically down there. And they're standing up under immense pressure. And then you go to the other end and you've got Jack Riewoldt playing with a bunch of midgets, basically, at the other end of the ground. And they're finding ways to orchestrate scores. They've just got an amazing inbuilt resilience that has developed, I guess, in a click over the last 12 months, and they're right into it, up to their eyeballs, Shebets. And as we saw last year, anything can happen. They were fantastic last night. After early on, I thought they could have been blown away by Port Adelaide.
Yeah, that's the way they've evolved. The arm wrestle was there for a long, long time. But Trent Cotchin, you touched on early on.
Yeah, he was
great. I think he's maturing at a great clip, and he's adding those key moments of stability and direction, which I think made a difference last night.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it's been a couple of weeks, and it might have even been last week, the game. I thought he's been quiet. The game against Carlton, I thought that Paddy Cripps really took him to the cleaners around stoppage. But last night he was back to his absolute best, no doubt. And I think Alex Rance said post-game he feels he's the best captain in the competition. And I guess we say that from internally because it's the only captain that you've sort of dealt with. But I think the Richmond guys, from everything you hear and everyone you talk to down there, are really enjoying what Trent's bringing to the table in terms of his leadership this year. And I think he spoke about that at the start of the year as well, in terms of the things that he changed, the way that he sort of looked at himself and his leadership style. So he was amazing last night. Now, I guess it's a bit of, not vindication, but for that final a couple of years ago where I guess he wins the toss, kicks into the wind, or the so-called wind, and then it was downhill from there. But I thought last night he really stepped up when they really needed it, because, as I said, I thought Port Adelaide were on early in terms of their ball movement. But then going inside 50, there were some drop marks, some easy shots that they missed that suggested, well, hang on, maybe things aren't going to go to plan tonight for Port. So Richmond were fantastic, and they deserve to be in the conversation, absolutely.
It was the classic game of chess last night between Port Adelaide and Richmond, because Ken Hinckley made a fantastic move at the start to sort of double-team on Rance, and then made Rance and Hardwick sort of change that bit of a game in the second half, which went to Richmond's advantage. And then as things started to go Richmond's way, Hinckley then had to make some changes. He put Robbie Gray into the middle to try and make things happen, but it just didn't work for them. It was a really good thinking game of footy.
Yeah, it was. And I guess that's the challenge with Robbie Gray at the moment. I guess we've all seen him as that sort of mid-forward, but he's becoming more and more of the forward mid who needs to play more in the front half just due to his running capabilities. He struggles to cover the ground as much as what an AFL midfielder does these days. And he's so much more dangerous inside forward 50. And
yeah, he can finish, that's why.
I think ideally Port would love to keep him there as a permanent forward and then try and bolster that midfield rotation. But on times they do have to throw him in there. A bit like, I think, what we're seeing with Christian Petrarca at Melbourne. He's more of a forward than a mid at this stage, and he's certainly more dangerous across half forward, although he does show when he goes into midfield he's got that burst and power, and Robbie's sort of the same way. But it was a chess match between the two coaches, absolutely, and in the end, Damien Hardwick was the one who called checkmate.
He did, fortunately for us.
40,000 crowd last night at the Adelaide Oval. Was that good? 39?
A little bit down.
Yeah, I
would have thought they would have got a few more there last night based on two teams who are in the top sort of five or six in the ladder. So slightly disappointing. And Richmond supporters do travel. We saw that at the end of the game. There's plenty of them over there.
Yeah, right. But the last time they travelled to Adelaide, they got beat. So maybe they might have been gun-shy.
Yeah, maybe. they're a good travelling team, Richmond. I'll give them that, especially if they go over to Perth. Now, just quick comment on the rest of the games. Gold Coast, North Melbourne, 300 for Gaz. And the boys did him proud.
They did, and Jared Lyons was outstanding too. He's one of the ones who's really snuck under the radar from a point of view of players who moved clubs at the end of last year. 38 or 39 touches last night, 10 clearances. I think the Crows would really like him in their midfield.
Adelaide v Carlton. Carlton ground out this game. They sort of stayed in there. Adelaide couldn't get away from them, but it was Adelaide who prevailed in the end.
We say this every week, they're really hard to play against and they're hard to move the ball against. They're well-structured, they're very well-coached, and it doesn't seem to matter what personnel they have there. They had six or seven changes yesterday. They plug and play players who play the system really well, and whilst they didn't get the win, I think they'd be really happy with the performance they put out. For Adelaide, it's a win at the MCG, but it wasn't convincing, was it? So they're going to need to show us a little bit more before we start to trust them a little bit.
Are you happy as a Blues man, George, at the moment?
Most of what Brett said, I'm thoroughly chuffed about. I'm watching the development of youngsters coming along. I love our composure in some positions, and I love our format, our ability to stay within the ground and do the structure things as they should be done. That's very, very pleasing.
Yeah,
but I want to win.
Yeah, of course you do. But
and it'll come.
Yeah,
it'll come.
It will. Speaking of winning, Jewish West Coast over the Bulldogs. How do you take this Bulldogs team, Brett? Where are they at?
Maybe they're not happy behind the scenes, well, and they can't do it on the field.
Bit of that.
Gone.
Are they?
Won't make the finals?
I think they're in trouble.
Jeez, you're calling them a long way out.
I just think the way that they're playing their footy at the moment, I think we all hope that they can get back to what they showed last year. But they look like they've...
They look cooked.
I've heard a few people say that they look like they lack the hunger. In some ways, I think they do, but I think it's just that other teams have improved a little bit, and unfortunately for the Dogs, they probably haven't improved as much as everyone else. In a tight comp, it makes it really hard, and you can go back with that, or you can seemingly go backwards at a rate of knots when really you haven't. You're just the same as what you were last year. So they just they're just really struggling at the moment. That's a game last year they would have won, and look, they did come from behind a little bit yesterday. They came from behind and looked like they could potentially get there. But I think West Coast had their measure for much of the afternoon, and it was their good players who did it again. Jack Garland, good to see him step up with three goals, and he had it was probably his best game, I would have thought, for the year.
Move on. City, of course, beating Melbourne earlier in the week as well on Friday night. We move on to today's games. Just a quick comment and your thoughts. Essendon-Brisbane, our SEN game at 1:10 at Etihad, Hawthorn-Collingwood at the MCG. And then we'll finish off the day, Fremantle and St Kilda at Domain.
Yeah, Essendon-Brisbane. I would think that the Bombers would win that one, but I expect Brisbane to be really competitive in that game. If the Bombers can play their fast, free-flowing footy, well, they could put on a real big score.
Can Hawthorn go back-to-back?
I think Collingwood will win. I just like Collingwood list a little bit more than Hawthorn's at the moment. I still think that Hawthorn have got that performance in them every couple of weeks, and like last week was obviously outstanding. I just reckon that Collingwood, the last three games, they've been quite good against Hawthorn. Prior to that, they were horrible, but I think there was a close loss, then there was a one-point loss, and then obviously they beat them earlier in the year after giving up a big start. So I think Collingwood will win in a tight one.
Always great to have you on board, mate. Thanks for your timing in today, Brett.
No worries, boys. And I think the Saints might win over in Perth this afternoon too, boys.
In what should be a fairly dour game, I would have thought.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Good to be with you, lad.
Good day, boy. See ya. Brett Anderson joining us. SEN Inside Football.
See, I told you he was shy. Doesn't say too much.
No, he doesn't say.
But thank goodness he got us through that. And he, as one of the football insiders, it's great to hear what... You know, basically... we get through the Brett filter, you get a sense of how the football competition's going.
Well, we've filtered out one Brett, and we've got another one coming through the filter as we speak after the break. Brett Phillips, our SEN commentator, to talk Wimbledon. Just
it is that time of the year.
It is.
On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
27 past nine, George Anikin in the studio with me as well. A Wimbledon update for ASTI, Melbourne's tennis court specialists and synthetic turf professionals. Head to aste.com.au. Brett Phillips, our SEN commentator, joins us on the line. G'day, Brett.
Yeah, good morning, Shebex and George.
Good morning. It's Wimbledon time.
It's the best 2 weeks of the year, George. And look, I've been lucky to go a few times. It's just one of the special sporting events. It's one of the really sacred sporting venues. I mean, you know, you always hear about people who have gone to Augusta for the Masters and other great events around the world, guys. But, you know, when you walk through the gates of Wimbledon, if you're not even a staunch avid tennis fan, there are so many. When I was there last year, I mean, there are people that queue up. They call it Tent City at Wimbledon Park, which is opposite. So these are people that just want to get in and get a little sample of the Wimbledon experience, have a Pimm's and some strawberries and cream,
yeah,
and just wander around the courts. And they queue up for hours. It snakes right around. They get in about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, sit on the hill on Murray Mound and just soak up a bit of Wimbledon. So,
wait for the rain to come. Is that right?
Well, the weather hasn't been great in the build-up, but lucky they've got a roof now on centre court, which certainly helps their cause, George.
Yeah. No doubt. Has that changed the strategy when you're playing there, Brett? Now that there's a roof?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, to be honest, since they put the roof in, it's hardly been used, which is quite ironic. So, there's been, I'm just trying to think back now. I only reckon a handful of times when they've had to use the roof. So, yeah, you've sort of got that indoor feel where you can really hear the ball. It's a bit off-putting, but, you know, the players are used to playing sort of indoor tennis at different
times. What's off-putting? Is it the grunting or is it the hitting of the ball?
Well, I think it's just sort of that echoey sort of feel when you're sort of indoors. But, to be honest, it hasn't been hardly used. But the weather, it's looking a little bit fickle over the next 2 weeks. So,
and who's on form to claim it this year?
Well, this is the million-dollar question. I mean, I think it's easier certainly to dissect on the men's side because we keep coming back to the status quo of you know, Murray, Djokovic, Federer and Nadal. And, you know, Vavrinka is the one who would love to add Wimbledon to the other three slams that he's been able to win. And he's got, you know, Paul Anacone now in his camp, who, of course, coached Sampras, coached Federer, to help him on the grass court just to hone his game. I think, you know, Roger's in superb form, having won Halle. Nadal has played a lead-up grass court tournament, but his practice form this week, he's looking absolutely cherry ripe. Djokovic has won Eastbourne overnight. He doesn't normally play a lead-up tournament, but obviously just with his form this year, he wanted to get out and play a few matches. And Murray's been a two-time winner. And look, he hasn't set the world on fire, Andy, this year, but he is the world number one. He's got good memory. So, that's an easier conversation. From an Australian perspective on the men's side, look, Kyrgios, I mean, he's declared himself only 60 to 65% fit. That hip is giving him a fair bit of trouble. He's got Herbert, the Frenchman, in the first round, which is going to be a pretty tough match. So I think we just lower the expectations for Nick because his body just isn't right at the moment. As far as the women's go, I mean, it's just a very, very tough conversation.
You know, without Serena in there, that's sort of really just opened everything up, hasn't it?
It has, Shebex, yeah. I mean, look, Azarenka's coming back, so she has a bit of star power to the women's side of the draw, but she's only played one lead-up tournament in Mallorca. Had her son, of course, born last December. She's had 13 months off the tour, but she's a two-time Grand Slam champion, so she's a winner, and she's preparing to go out there and go as deep as she can into the tournament. From an Aussie perspective, look, Ash Barty's got a really tough one against Elena Svitolina, who's probably the informed player of the year. She's up to number 5 in the world, won 4 titles. She's come on in leaps and bounds. But,
and she's got a great game. She's got a great game.
Well, they're quite similar in a sense, George, these two. I mean, they're sort of built low in stature, but, gee, they get some balls back. There'll be some long rallies in that match. And I reckon Ash can certainly push it a 3. I mean, Barty, took Kvitova to 3 in that Birmingham final in the lead-up only about 10 days ago. Arena Rodionova qualifying for the first time, which is a really good story. Up against Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, former world junior number 1, and Daria Gavrilova's got Petra Martic, who surprised everyone at the French by making the 4th round. And, there's no certainty with Kerber as the world number 1. She's certainly struggling. Halep hasn't always played that well on grass over the years. The one I'm probably leaning towards is Petra Kvitova. I mean, she's the feel-good story, having had that, horrible assault on her back in December in the Czech Republic. Missed the first 6 months. She's probably the most popular female player on the tour, Petra. You love her smile. She's just an absolute delight to talk to. And, she won last week in the build-up. So I reckon as a two-time Wimbledon winner, she could maybe get through the field again.
Brett, what is it about Wimbledon that makes it so special compared to the other tournaments? Every Grand Slam, of course, has its air of...
It's on grass.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a special feeling. Oh, look, you play tennis on grass, it's like no other experience.
No, spot on. And look, it's just got the history. I mean, the grass court season isn't long enough. It only goes about a month, but it should go at least 6 weeks when we have enough clay court tennis. But when you walk through the gates, it's just... It's hard to describe, Shebex. It's just got this aura about it. Yes, it's a very different crowd to an Australian Open crowd. Everyone's a little bit more proper in the pims, and, it's just... it's just got that, that real prestige about it, Wimbledon. And everything is just, around is manicured, and, it's just a great setting. You really feel like you're at the home of tennis, and that's the stage, if you're a tennis player, that you want to perform at. I mean, there's the qualifiers who have got through, they play at Roehampton down the road, which is, actually, Linda Pierce made the great comparison. It's like a Mini Cooper versus a Rolls-Royce. When you're at Roehampton, you've got to earn your stripes. It's not on the hallowed turf of Wimbledon, but to get to play on the main courts, you can do it once in your life. That's just a career highlight.
Yeah, fantastic stuff, mate. Look forward to catching up with you over the next couple of Sundays as we dissect what has been happening and what will happen in Wimbledon 2017.
Yeah, good stuff, guys. 10 o'clock tonight, first serve, always on a Sunday night with a full preview and taking plenty of calls as well.
Enjoy, mate. Enjoy.
Brett Phillips joining us, RSN commentator. Thanks to ASTI, Melbourne's tennis court specialist and synthetic turf professionals. Head to aste.com.au. A break. We're talking cricket and boxing up next.
On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeke. Hey.
George Zanikian in the studio as well. Rugby union overnight. The Blues 34 defeating Queensland Reds 29. The Crusaders 25 defeating the Highlanders 22. Chiefs 46 defeating the Waratahs 31. The Brumbies 32 defeating the Rebels 3.
Yeah, but don't forget the test match, mate. Hey? The Lions absolutely beat the Invincibles, the All Blacks.
Yeah, there you go.
First time in a long time.
Haven't been over there, I think... 18 years.
Sonny Bill Williams, first All Black in 50 years to be sent off.
Really?
Woo-hoo.
Yeah. Chiefs are 17 to feed the Hurricanes 14. The Bulls and the Sharks, it was the Bulls 30-17. The Kings 31 defeating the Jaguars 30. And the Stormers 40 defeating the Cheetahs 34. Also, should mention too, Australian Richie Porte has endured a tough start to his Tour de France campaign, finishing 49th in a dramatic opening time trial won by Welshman Geraint Thomas of Team Sky. A wet first stage in Dusseldorf. How do you start the Tour de France in Dusseldorf?
Well, it's the Tour of Europe as well now. It's become that big. You have to start somewhere, and they keep moving the posts to make it more exciting for the television viewers. which number in the zillions.
Rain-soaked roads. Alejandro Valverde had a big crash as well. And
look,
as
you can't win the Tour de France
on the first day, no, you can't.
But you can certainly put yourself way back.
You certainly can. Time to talk cricket.
Speaking of putting yourself way back,
maybe cricket has done exactly that as well.
Back 20 years, I reckon.
Tom Morris from Fox Sports Cricket joins us to talk about exactly that. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Shebeck. Morning, George. How are you?
Morning, guys.
Excellent. Thank you, mate. Now, this is like a stalemate at the moment. Big executive meeting of the ACA today to see if they can work something out. But, gee whiz, it's looking ugly.
It's very ugly. And today is the day. I mean, today is the day when the Australian cricketers will get together and they'll decide what their next course of direction is. And I guess in the short term, that is the Australia A tour to South Africa. And then in the medium term, it's a tour to Bangladesh and a one-day tour of India. But, I mean, at the moment, there's 230 Australian cricketers that are affected significantly. Many of these aren't on the $500,000 or $1 million like Steve Smith and David Warner. So they've got mortgages and rents to pay, and as of now,
they're unemployed.
And, that's the real problem here. But there's also 70 players who are still contracted with their states, and they've got to decide whether they're going to stick with... stick with the players
in
this entire saga, or they're going to, hang on, we're contracted, we can be available for Australia to go to South Africa. So it's a really tough one.
Wow. It's an extraordinary set of... I want to know where James Sutherland is in all of this. Why is he keeping himself in the shadows?
It's a great, great question. Look, in fairness to James Sutherland, he's on the record a few years ago, six, 7 years ago, actually promoting the revenue sharing system. So for this to work, for the revenue sharing system to be significantly modified or cut as Cricket Australia wanted, he had to sit in the background and PIVA had to move forward. But in saying that, it's at a stage now where you've got Alistair Nicholson, the CEO of the Cricketers Association, who is reportedly ready to negotiate, and James Sutherland doesn't want a bar of him. So it's a really interesting one. Look, the reality is James Sutherland, as the CEO, it's on him. And this is his biggest challenge. He's been in that role 16 years. He was promoted early. I think no one could argue that he's done a terrific job helping promote the game. The introduction of the BBL has been terrific. The Australian cricket team has flourished. The players have made more money here and here.
But
if this doesn't work and cricket continues to go down this path next 2 to 3 months...
So much for his legacy.
Yeah, and the Ashes are affected, then Sutherland's legacy will be significantly tarnished. And that's on him. So, look, he's a smart man. He'll have his reasons, but he needs to get involved soon. Otherwise, this could go really, really pear-shaped for him and cricket in general.
So I suppose the question then needs to be asked, Tom, what needs to happen for this impasse to be fixed? Who needs to move? Who needs to make a decision on moving in regards to fixing this whole situation?
Yeah, it's a great question. Cricket Australia will argue that they did blink first about a week ago when they offered a slightly different offer to the players. They included the state cricketers, which they thought would be able to get through. The cricketers rejected that straight away. That wasn't revenue sharing, that was profit sharing. So if the game makes a loss, then profit sharing is irrelevant, effectively.
Yeah, it's struggling. They struggle to meet their numbers.
Correct. So the cricketers want revenue sharing, and they're not willing to budge on that. They're willing to budge on the smaller details of it. But it's worked for 20 years. And look, my view is that given the status quo is a revenue sharing model, Cricket Australia need a good reason, and they need to articulate it specifically with financial details in order to change that. Otherwise, it won't. And we look back to the Major League Baseball crisis, the mid-1990s. And if you remember that, it was an absolute disaster for the game. It took 5 years for the game to recover, but... No, the players and the board didn't come together and agree at all then. It was the courts who decided that the status quo must continue, and that's how the game got back on. So really, at the moment, Cricket Australia's not willing to budge. They said they were, but they didn't really budge. The cricketers are certainly not willing to budge, and to be honest, I don't blame them because they've got options everywhere else in the world, and the landscape has changed, and they're just so far apart, and it's been like this for 8 months, and it's been tit for tat through the media, and look, I'm probably more so on the players' side than in the Cricket Australia side, but I understand that both sides have made mistakes, and it just needs to be fixed for the better of the game.
Yeah, it certainly does,
and it's an Ashes year.
Yes, I know.
Oh,
the
my
Poms
goodness.
Would be sitting back there just loving this, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it is an Ashes year, and that's very important. But think of this proposed 7-match one-day tour of India in September. we can't afford not to go to that. The BCCI would lose it if we didn't send a team or we sent a really understrength team to India, because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
So there's even more immediate concern than that. It's a real issue. And players like David Warner, it's terrific that they're stepping up and being vocal about it. But action is what's needed, not just words at the moment.
Good on you, mate. Thanks, Tom. We appreciate that. Might catch up with you next week and see if there's any movement.
We'll wait and see. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
You too, buddy. Tom Morris, Fox Sports Cricket, joining us to have a chat about the impasse, as we said, in cricket.
I can't believe it. I can't believe that you've got professionals at both ends and they cannot make a decision. Well, we've come to this impasse and nothing's happening.
Kerry Packer be turning in his grave?
Oh, let's not go there. Let us not go there.
After
but
all the
Ian
work...
Chappell would be spewing. Because all the work that they've done over the years to get the game to where it is today.
Yeah.
And yes, there may well have been a case where some players are being paid extraordinary numbers in terms of dollars and cents. And many of them at the top end have become millionaires. But this is the way the world's changing. The players are finally, after years and years and years, getting paid for what they're contributing. And we're seeing it in America with the basketball contract.
Yep.
Steph Curry, as you said, last 5 years he's been paid about $40 million. The next 5 years, $200 million. So it's payday.
Certainly is, and hopefully it'll be payday for this
cricketers
soon as well. Court to 10. We'll take a break. Boxing and rugby league up next.
A little sparring session coming up
on 11:16 SEN. The ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
George Savankian in the studio with me as well at 11:11. It's time to talk boxing, and as our old mate Gus Mercurio would have once said, big time boxing's back in Brisbane. 50,000 people expected to watch the big fight between Horn and Pacquiao today. And to tell us who's going to win, Peter Maniatis, our boxing expert, joins us. G'day, Pete.
Good morning, guys.
It's a big fight. It is a big, big fight, and probably one of the biggest ones we've seen in Australian shores for a while.
That is 50,000 people. The atmosphere's electric here. Ringside at the Suncorp Stadium. The undercard's been pretty good as well. We had an Australian boy just win, Brett Dane, so that was good for Australian boxing. And Brock Jarvis, Jeff Bennett, prize fighter, just won as well, kept his undefeated record intact. But Manny Pacquiao, Jeff Horns, had the whole country talking which way to go. But look, Manny Pacquiao's a prodigy, he's a typhoon tornado. He's going to become a Horn. Whether Horn's strong enough and can take the big-time pressure, it's his first crack at this level. And we don't really know, but I'm told he's trained to the minute, and his prep's been fantastic. And the same with Manny Pacquiao. I spoke to Freddie Roach, his trainer, Justin Fortune, and they both told me that Manny's got the eye of the tiger back. I was actually in Manila 3 weeks with Manny with his pre-prep, and he looked fantastic for 3 weeks. He actually had an Australian sparring partner, George Cambosis, there as well. And Manny's prep's been fantastic. It's been awesome, to tell you the truth, but at 38 years of age, as far as I'm caught up with him, we won't know till about 3 p.m. today.
He's bigger, Horn. He's younger, obviously. Maybe not as quick as Pacquiao overall, but there are some advantages to Horn's fight.
He's going to have 50,000 people screaming for him. Manny's come here. Manny arrived here Saturday night, Air Asia private jet. And look, when you go to another country, it's different weather, different food. It takes a while to settle. And today it's pretty chilly in the morning a little. I mean, in the Philippines, it'll probably be 42 degrees. So you've got to adjust the weather, different conditions, different crowd. So it's going to be a tough ask for Manny to do that all in 1 week. But look, he's travelled all around the world. He's an experienced campaigner. But you've got to give the edge to Horn on that fact that it's his home ground. He was born in Brisbane. He gets to sleep in his own bed, probably drives here in his own car. Everything's familiar. His mates are all here. So, and the promoters, Zuka, really looked after him to get Manny Pacquiao here, because Pacquiao, I mean, his feet tonight's going to be, or today's going to be $10 million US, which is roughly about 12 or 13 million Australian dollars. So they put the big dollars up to get him here. They've given Horn a chance to fight a legend and give himself an opportunity to get a big shot in the world stage, because if he beats Manny Pacquiao here tonight, or today, he's going to absolutely put himself at the top echelon of world boxing, and I mean, he'll be able to write any numbers he likes on the next check.
Well, that's true, but I've got to say, Pete, that you mentioned that Manny is a legend. I watched him in an interview last night on ESPN, And he just sat there. He was talking about the upcoming opportunity for the young Queenslander, the 50,000 crowd. He was pumping it, the whole match up for himself and the bout as if he was the guy also directing the script. So, it, you know, Jeff's got a terrific opportunity. You're right. But my goodness gracious me, he's playing against one of the toughest boxers in the world who really knows how to get ready for these special occasions.
Oh, look, Manny Pacquiao is a legend. There's not much more you can say about Manny Pacquiao. The guy is, 11-time world champion in 8 different weight classes. I've had that much to do with Manny over the years. I first met him 14, 15 years ago when he won his third world title. He was relatively just a normal boxer back then, profile-wise. But the guy's a gunslinger. He's got unbelievable endurance. His speed and power, he hits like a heavyweight. I'm not joking. The bag, he leaves a hole in the bag. This guy is an absolute freak of nature. And, I mean, we're going to be in for a treat because Jeff Horn, he's the type of guy that goes down on his shield. If you knock him down, he gets up and tries even harder. He's a true blue Aussie boy that's got a great spirit. But as I mentioned before, he's going to be up against a typhoon here today, Manny Pacquiao. And Manny's got his supporters too. And the Filipinos love him. He's staying at the Sofitel in Brisbane. And there was a Bible service last night. Manny actually conducted it.
Nice.
Born again Christian. I was actually with Manny's brother, Bobby. We went to another function with Duco. And Jeff Parker, Parker was there, the WBO world champion. And we got back and Manny was already in there by 8:30. So at night, he's taking his fight seriously. And I'm pretty sure the Australian public are going to get a fight that, you know, sometimes we think, it didn't live up to the hype. This will live up to the hype. Any Manny Pacquiao fight, you never forget. It's as simple as that.
Good on you, Pete. Enjoy the rest of the day, mate, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. If you need any updates, I'm here.
Good on you, mate. Pete Maniatis joining us here live at Suncorp Stadium for what promises to be a ripper of a fight this afternoon.
And the action has already started.
It certainly
has. The undercard.
Yeah, because I think they're trying to fit it into primetime America. So,
of course they are.
Yeah, I think the fight's around about 2 o'clock our time.
Yeah, you've got
which
to
will
fit
be around
it
about 8:30, 9 o'clock.
It means money.
It's
it means
all
an opportunity
about
to get
money.
The sponsors on board. And they've locked them up, and I think they're making every best endeavour. It's called the Battle of Brisbane.
Yeah.
So how fantastic.
Yeah, that's good.
Australia
man.
Getting a full rap, and young Jeff getting an opportunity of a lifetime.
The hockey through the hockey ruse.
You reckon he can grab it?
Yeah, I reckon Horn can do it.
All right, let's see.
We will.
All
the right. Hockey ruse have thrashed Belgium in Brussels to keep alive their hopes of qualifying for next year's Hockey World Cup in England. A 5-1 thumping means Australia now plays off against Italy for fifth spot on Sunday at the World League semi-final. Let's talk rugby league. And we do that with Gilbert Gardner from the Herald Sun and their Melbourne Storm reporter. G'day, Gilbert.
G'day, Tony. G'day, George. How are you going?
Good, thank you, mate. Thanks for joining us this morning. I want to first talk to you about the Melbourne Storm and their win over the Broncos, 42-12 on Friday night.
No, they didn't win. It was a blitz.
It was a blitz. And what I'm going to say at this point in time, is this probably the most complete rugby league team that we've seen in maybe the last 10 to 15 years of rugby league? They look as good as any other team that's ever stepped on the park.
You wouldn't be far off the mark. I think the most important part is the depth. They've just everyone that they seem to bring in seems to do well. Curtis Scott couldn't get a game at the start of the year with Chase Blair and Will Chambers playing in the centres. Origin injury comes in. He comes in and he can't stop scoring. So it's an incredible outfit, incredible culture. They just sort of train them so well.
Well, it tells you that they understand that there's a system, and they all get to make sure the young guys, when they come in, can play the system.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And look, Craig keeps it very simple, and I think that's the crucial element in their success, is that these blokes, they come in and they know exactly what they've got to do.
Yep.
And they don't feel the need to do anything extra. They just do what they need to do.
Yeah, it's that wonderful line, plug and play.
Exactly.
You get them in, and away they go.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, I mean, another big test this week. I think, it's exciting this week. We get to see, obviously, all the young kids come out again with Origin next Wednesday. So all the big guns won't be playing against Parramatta next week. And it's just another opportunity to see the young kids come out and fire.
And I think that's been the most impressive thing for me about the Storm, Gilbert, is the fact that in the last few years, they've really struggled through this 4 or 5 week period of Origin time where they've lost Cameron Smith, Billy Slater, Cooper Cronk, because they haven't had that depth. But now they've got the depth. They've kept on winning and lost by a point, I think, what, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That it just seems like, yeah, they're able to cover those guys now and it's not an issue, whereas other teams are, of course, struggling because they lose their stars.
Yeah, no doubt. And you add to that Tim Glasby, you got Will Chambers playing Origin as well. That he's Cameron Munster's probably a $1.60 favourite to get into the Maroons jerseys next week as well for his debut. So that's about six or seven genuine starting players, players that would play in any other NRL team on any other day.
Yeah.
And they'll all be missing next week. So, but we've seen before the kids can play, and Brody Croft, another opportunity for him. Jerome Hughes, another opportunity. So it's going to be, look, they haven't been beaten in regulation during this Origin period, which is extraordinary, given the amount of players that have been out.
Exactly right. So it was the Storm 42 defeating Brisbane 12, Parramatta 13 defeating Canterbury 12, Gold Coast 20 defeating Illawarra, St George Illawarra 10.
Yeah, go easy, mate.
Yeah,
my boys needed Cronulla, a better result. They couldn't do it.
Cronulla 44, Sydney Roosters 12, Manly 26, Warriors 22, and North Queensland 31 defeating Canberra 18. We move on to Origin. This is probably one of the most anticipated Origin games a long time, because New South Wales showed so much in the first game. Queensland showed so much heart in the second game. This could be an absolute one for the ages.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Geez, it would be nice if JT was playing, though, wouldn't it? I mean,
yeah, it would.
He's really the heartbeat of that Queensland team, and it's just a shame that he won't be there. But look, Cameron Munster, if he gets the gig, I think that'll be a really great opportunity. That basically means that Queensland, their spine will be Melbourne Storm's spine. so they know exactly how to play together. Look, it's going to be a massive loss, but you can't doubt Billy, Cam and Cooper. Put them together, throw in a few other crucial cogs in the mix, and look, I think it'll be a close one. I think New South Wales should just get them. You'd think, I mean, they are the four or the better team.
Where's the game being played again?
Yeah, well, that's at Suncorp, exactly where the Storm boys were this week. But they lost their game one, of course, and you just get the feeling that maybe New South Wales was drinking a bit of their own bathwater last week and just expected to come out and win. And obviously the JT factor. And
I mean, Queensland, it's not WWW.
Now it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Gilbert, thanks for your time. Really do appreciate it. From the Herald Sun, Gilbert Gardner joining us. George, talk to you soon.
All the very best. Have a great week, folks.
Yeah, Finey and Adam Cooney coming up next.